Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
Fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me this week is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
It is going well. Good overall, Chris.
Excellent.
It's been a crazy week, but we'll say it's good overall here in the States.
All right. So yeah, at the time of this recording, it is one day after the U.S. presidential election, and as far as I know, as of right now, there isn't a decided winner. They're still tallying the votes. But up here, Kevin, our news is kind of leaning towards Joe Biden as being the winner. What's the feeling down there?
That is our news as well.
Okay.
So the U.S. for each of the 50 states and D.C. has won as well. It is an electoral college system, which is your total number of representatives in Congress is how many electoral college votes you have. The original idea, when all this was drafted, was you don't want a candidate just hitting big cities, getting all the big city votes and ignoring the middle of the country.
Yeah.
So if you divide it up that each state gets a certain amount of votes, then in theory, you get a more well-rounded candidate that visits all the states. It's not what happens because they just go, oh, the state's going to vote this way no matter what. Mm-hmm. So why bother wasting my time there? I'll go to what they call the battleground states.
Yeah.
And that's what we're down to now is these battleground ones. Arizona, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Nevada, all four right now have Joe Biden in the lead. There's still some early votes to be counted, but most of your early voters were Democrats. Mm-hmm. So he's probably most likely going to retain the lead. Nevada, last I heard, said they're going to call it at 9 a.m. tomorrow, but that they're supposed to call it at 9 a.m. today. And I don't know if that's Eastern time, Pacific time, what time that's being reported. If that goes through, that's probably it.
Interesting.
So that's the way we're thinking right now, but anything could happen. Between this year, between this last 4 years, anything could happen at this point. Mm-hmm. But the Vegas odds are saying Biden right now, so.
Well, that's good. But I remember the Vegas odds, what was it, this year? Or maybe it was last year. They favored the Edmonton Oilers to win the Stanley Cup, so. And that did not happen, so. You never know. You never know what's going to happen. It's interesting, anyway. The real question is, what's Trump going to do if he actually loses? I know he's already got his lawyers working on it. I know Rudolph Giuliani's working on stuff. And it's just accept defeat, man.
He's already asking for recounts. And the thing about him, the interesting thing is everything that he's, for the most part, everything he accuses someone else of doing, he or someone close to him ends up getting caught doing. They have a private email server. Yes, Ivanka, your daughter does have a private email server. He'll accuse Joe Biden of being on drugs during the debate. Yet he's the one up there sniffling and everything. So there's always something.
Yeah.
But he was saying a speech about people leaving the country. I was like, he's going to leave. He is absolutely going to leave. He's going to seek sanctuary in another country and never come back, is how I'm leaning right now. Because as soon as come January, if he loses, which I don't want to fly too high, but that's how it's looking right now, if he loses come January, he is already facing many charges in New York State.
Yep.
Tax evasion, corruption, all sorts of stuff. And you could do a federal pardon, kind of like Nixon got when he left. You can do federal pardon, but you can't pardon state charges. It'll just continue to be interesting. I'm done with interesting for a little while. Mm-hmm. I texted my wife earlier tonight. I'm like, I'm done. I'm done today.
Well, at least, like, so far, there's been no riots or anything. I know they were really worried about that. Fingers crossed, well, hopefully, you know, nothing like that will happen.
In Detroit, there's actually a group, a pro-Trump group right now, telling them to stop counting votes. Because they're mad that the more votes get counted, the more votes there are for Biden.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but you count every vote. That's how this works.
Yeah, that's...
If your guy loses, sorry.
Yeah.
But that's how this works. We keep counting until we're done. And that's been the worst thing I've seen, is them not wanting votes counted.
Well, I think probably one of the biggest mistakes, well, one of many mistakes that Trump made, was telling people not to mail in votes. Because, you know, I think there's a lot of Republicans that probably would have voted but didn't go out because they're scared and don't want to admit they're scared about COVID, you know, COVID-19. So they didn't actually vote at all when they could have just mailed in their vote.
Well, and apparently there was one report where I guess last night, either last night or this morning, he was saying, well, how come I don't have mail-in votes? And his staff's like, because you told your people not to do it.
Yeah.
That's why you don't have it.
Yep. No, I really think in many ways Donald Trump has underestimated COVID-19. Not just the virus, but the effect it has on people and how scared people are to go out. And I mean, if you're older or, you know, have existing health conditions, of course you're scared of this thing. Like, you know, like, and if your leader's telling you not to mail in your vote, you're not going to mail in your vote, and then there's no vote. Like, I really think, you know, that he really did some damage there to his own party by doing that.
Well, I was sick all last week, and I'm mostly recovered, but I can still, you know, feel I'm not at 100%. But work had me get a COVID test, and I knew it was just a stomach sickness. I knew it was something I ate, and for whatever reason, I couldn't shake it. But they said, you can't come back to work until you get a COVID test, just to make sure. Everyone wants to protect themselves, you know, legally and everything. And I got it. I wasn't upset or anything. I understood. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the test was not as bad as I thought it was going to be either.
Yep.
But from the moment of getting tested to the moment of, you know, days later of getting the results, like, my wife and I are sitting here like, okay, what do we do? Because we don't think I have it, but what if we're wrong? You know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I stayed home. I mean, I was sick anyway. It's not like I was going out anywhere, but I tried to even isolate myself from her and our child just to be like, I don't know what's happening here. Just in case we're wrong, we got to figure it out. So we kind of sent people, you know, a heads up message. Hey, Kevin got tested. We're waiting. We don't think it's anything, but just as a heads up.
Yep.
And everyone, like, it's, you know, it's nothing until it hits home. For so many people. And, and I think, you know, we've said it before, like, for a lot of people, it's going to take someone they know getting sick or dying for them to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people like, oh, crap, what do I do? It was almost, do you remember the old sketch of, it was a Saturday Night Live sketch of James Bond having to call all of his partners to say that he has an STD?
No, I missed that one.
But it was, so he's calling, like, every, you know, they're making references to every previous movie, and then he's calling up random other pop culture characters. But that's how we felt, like, hey, Kevin might have something. Yeah. He's been in contact with
them. I know what that's like. I had a similar thing back in April, but it was just a chest cold for me, and I ended up having to take a week off of work because of it, and I had to get tested. And you know, I was positive. Like, I mean, I get a cold every, you know, once or twice a year, right? Like, it just happens. Under normal circumstances, like pre-COVID-19, I wouldn't even have missed a day of work. I would have just went to work. It wasn't debilitating to me, right? I would have just, kept my distance from people and told people, don't come close, I got a cold, blah, blah, blah. But because of COVID-19, I had to get tested, and yeah, it sucks, it does. But I mean, of course mine came back negative, but we live in that world now. You can't get people sick. Even if it isn't COVID-19, your immune system's already down. Like, you don't want to get the virus when it's, already compromised. So.
Yeah, and there is one of the things for my work is, okay, we agree with you, it probably isn't, but now you're coming in sick and spreading something. So what if,
Yeah.
my immune system's low, I spread it to someone else and I knock them out.
Yep.
I don't want to feel that guilt.
Yep, exactly. Yep. But anyway, hopefully this time next year COVID-19 will be a distant memory. I'm hoping, fingers crossed.
Oh, God,
And
yeah.
this time next year we'll know who won the presidential race. Well, probably by the next time we record, we should know. Whether or not Trump accepts it is another question. but anyway, let's move on to our topic for this evening. And that is, we were wrong and now we admit it. We've all been there when, we passed judgment on something in pop culture and, came to realize, a little bit while later, maybe after, the whatever you want to call it, the brightness of it has dimmed, and you're looking at it with clearer eyes now. And, maybe it isn't as good as you thought, or maybe it's not as bad as you thought. So this is those instances. We were wrong and now we admit it. So Kevin, what were you wrong about and now you admit it in pop culture?
All right, so I'll start with a light one. I remember I was at college, and a girl I was dating was in a night class, and I was just hanging out waiting for her in like common area. And the brand new show came on at 8, or must have been 8. And I was like, oh, brand new sci-fi show, I'll sit and watch it. And I hated it. Thought it was ridiculous. It was either ridiculous, and parts were like, oh, geez, that's kind of intense for 8 o'clock network TV show. And I ignored it. Never watched it again. Then years later, I was dating someone else who said, oh, no, you missed out on a lot here. We're going to sit down and watch the whole series. And I loved it. And I couldn't believe I saw day one, night one, and hated it. And I missed out. And that was Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I was gonna ask.
So,
Yep.
yep, first episode came on. I was just like, what in the hell is this? And I don't know, maybe. I probably would have been like 18 or 19, probably just not in the mood for it, not in the right headspace, if it came along later. But then dating someone later on that loved it and, was like holding my hand through it at first, and then I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. It's fantastic. I need to watch all of it now, and did, and Angel. But it gets me that, like, I could have been watching it all along, and I had friends that loved it and watched it all along, and I would not, based on that first episode, I wouldn't even give it a try. So I was just shocked that this thing of Buffy had existed. I was there day one and wouldn't even give it a chance. And I think, like you've probably experienced too, when you start dating someone and they say, oh, I really like this movie, I really like this song, whatever, you give it a try because you want to connect with that person. So when I started dating someone later on that was into it, I'm like, oh, I'll give it a try. And then I was like, oh, different headspace, many years later in life, whatever it was, I came at it with fresh eyes and thought, oh my gosh, this is great. I have to give it a try now. Loved it. And, watch Angel, everything else, of course.
I had a similar experience with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, in that, like, it debuted when I was still living at home, and my sister watched it, right? So, of course, because my, you know, little sister's watching it, I can't watch it, right? And then it was years later, I was listening to the Atomic Geeks podcast, and they were talking about it and raving and all that stuff about it. And I was at Walmart, and, like, the first season was on sale for, like, I don't know, $10 or something. So I was like, oh, I'll give it a try. And I ended up watching it and really enjoying it. And I still haven't watched the entire series, but we've made it through, I think, halfway through season two. And I know bits and pieces of what comes later. But yeah, it is a good show. It's just, I haven't got a chance to actually get around to watching it. But yeah, no, it's great, I think.
Yeah, we got going so hardcore on it. My wife and I, she was having, well, you know, girlfriend at the time, now wife.
Yep.
That we found a site that told you once Angel becomes a spinoff show, what order you have to watch both shows in. Because we didn't want events on one show to spoil the other one. So we were trying to watch everything in order.
Interesting. Excellent choice. Yeah, and to add to the girlfriend part of it, same thing with my wife. Like, she was watching, she used to watch Young and the Restless. So I got into watching Young and the Restless with her for a while. But then she stopped, so I stopped. But I was dating a girl as well, probably 20 years ago now, and she was into Gilmore Girls, and I never watched the show. To me, I thought it was like a girly show, blah, 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 and, you know, didn't want to watch it. And I ended up watching it and really enjoying it, so much so that after we broke up, I continued to watch it. And, you know, when Netflix, I think it was like 5 years ago now, 5 or 6 years ago, they had those Gilmore Girls movies or whatever.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about those. Yeah.
Yeah, those four, you know, for each season type of thing. Yeah. I went back and watched that and loved it. It was great. Fantastic. All right. So first up on my list is Lord of the Rings. And I'm talking about the movies.
Okay.
So, you know, for those who don't know, like, I'm not the biggest fantasy guy. I'm more of a sci-fi guy, but I do like some fantasy, right? And Lord of the Rings, you know, like, I knew of the books, never read them. Knew a bit about the story. So anyway, I just want to set the stage here. So when it came out to my local theater, I took my little cousin with me, right? He was, I want to say, about 6 years old at the time. And we drove to the theater, and it was like a snowstorm. It was crappy. There was a couple times I thought about turning around, but I promised him I was going to take him to this movie. So I took him to this movie, and it was at an old... Our theater at the time hadn't renovated itself, so the seats, you know, were like 30 years old at this point. You know, and then we sat down to watch a 3.5-hour movie on old seats. You know, and I had my little cousin with me, and he was getting bored halfway through the movie, and he kind of wanted to go, but I wanted to see it through. And then, like I said, I had to drive home in a snowstorm. And at the time, I was dating a girl, and we were supposed to go out after the movie. I was going to drop my cousin off, and then we were going to go out. Meet some friends at the bar, but she said she was working, she was tired, she didn't want to go out. And then I got home, and I was supposed to call her, and I called her, and then later found out from her roommate, because she wasn't answering the phone, that she had actually went out to the bar without me, and she was hanging out with her ex-boyfriend. And yeah, it wasn't a good night, you know. So all things considered, you know, I remember talking to my girlfriend's roommate about it, because she had went to see the movie as well, and she was ranting and raving about it, and I'm like, I don't know what movie you saw. I thought that was terrible. You know, like, it wasn't terrible, but I just didn't enjoy it. So fast forward, you know, 6 months or whatever, when it is released on DVD. And again, like, of course, I'm hearing all these, you know, good people ranting and raving about it. You know, people I know, people I respect. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm gonna buy the DVD. I'm gonna watch it again, give it a chance. You know, if I don't like it, you know, I'll give the DVD to someone else. And I ended up watching it, and I fell in love. I was like, oh my God, this is actually a very good movie. So much so that I went out and bought the special edition shortly thereafter. Like, it was released, I don't know, like a month or two after the DVD came out. And then I loved it even more. Like, watching the extra, you know, 40 minutes of footage or whatever actually made the movie better. Like, it was amazing. Like, normally when you have these special editions or whatever, you know, sometimes they just add things that don't add anything to the movie and don't enhance it in any way. But this totally enhanced it. I totally fell in love with it, and I ended up going to the theater to watch the second one, fell in love with that, bought the special edition, went to the third one, and by this time, my girlfriend at the time was now not the same girlfriend from the first movie, but this but this was a new girlfriend who was now my wife. We went and watched the third movie at the theater, and I, of course, when the special edition came out, I bought it. And yeah, it's easily one of my favorite movie series of all time. Like, I watched that first movie, like I said, and I didn't understand what everyone was raving about, but then I was so wrong. Like, and the only thing I can attribute to it is that it was all the extenuating circumstances around it. You know, it was the snowstorm, it was my cousin, you know, wanting to leave, it was my girlfriend at the time, you know, being dishonest with me. You know, it, like, I remember sitting in the theater, like I said, they hadn't renovated the theater yet, so my ass was so sore, like, after an hour in those 30-year-old seats. I was so uncomfortable, you know. So I was definitely wrong. Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, amazing movie, amazing film series. I love it, and that's the first one on my list.
I have a friend that he'll talk about when he's reading his comics, and he gets a ton of them on Wednesday, and he's going through, and if he reads like two or three comics that aren't good in a row,
mm-hmm.
the fourth one might be okay, but because he's already in a bad mood, mm-hmm. he is harsher towards it. So frequently there's ones where he's like, okay, I got to go back and read that. I'm in a better mood today. Let me go back and read it. I'll probably yep. enjoy it more. And he'll call it reading angry, but it's absolutely a thing for anything that you could possibly enjoy. If you go into it with a bad mood, you're just not going to enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. So Kev, next on your list, sir.
All right, I got a reversal for one.
Okay.
One that I enjoyed and thought I was in the right. And looking back now, I'm like, oh, that was kind of a waste of money. And that was young me in the early 90s putting All Image on my pull list. I mean, most of us did.
Mm-hmm.
And some were good. And some I still enjoy. Some I think were actually really good. Some I enjoy for nostalgia reasons.
Yeah.
And then there's others where I'm like, that's just a waste of money. I have all these issues, and I couldn't tell you a single character. I couldn't tell you, you know, their motivations, their background, their backstory, who's fighting who, why, anything of it. Mm-hmm. It looks pretty most of the time, you know, most of them, but I just don't care. Spawn and Savage Dragon, I think, clearly had something, which is why they're the two still running today.
Mm-hmm.
I do have an affinity for Shadowhawk, and I'm saying that, like, I haven't read it since it, you know, first came out, but I like the idea. It looked really cool. You know, it was something. But then all the team ones, even Wildcats and Youngblood and Cyberforce and then Brigade and what the heck was the other one? Bloodstrike. And then he did Prophet, and, you know, then Wildcats got, you know, Team 7, I think, or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it was Cyber Force, or what was the other one? Codename Strike Force. I'm like, I don't care. I don't know who anyone is here. I don't even care. You're just putting stuff out. But I was buying, I think they were like $1.95, $2 an issue for all of them. I had a long box full of all of it, complete runs. And I'm just like, I do not care. I would have been, and still to this day, I'll look back, like, you know, I'll go to my local comic shop and I'm going through back issues. And I'm like, I want to get a good Ultraverse run,
mm-hmm.
you know, new universe I'm just curious about, so I kind of want to get it. Today I found a bunch that had the Marvel 25th anniversary in the corner. I was like, oh, that's cool. But I know who the characters are. I haven't read Alpha Flight, but I know who Alpha Flight is.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you know, I haven't read Power Pack, but I know who they are. Yeah, I read all these Image titles, and I can't tell you who the characters are, even though I did read them all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame, because some of them look cool.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them, you know, I'll do Wikipedia. I'm like, okay, who is that? I'm like, that's a good idea. Why couldn't they have done something with it? I'm just like, man, I just wasted money on all of this.
Yep. Yeah, no, and I don't blame you at all, Kevin, for you know, doing that back in the 90s, because I did something very similar. Like, you saw an Image book, like the art on most of them were just incredible. And you think, oh, this is a great comic, you're great, and then you actually start reading it, and it's like, ugh. You know, like the art, it looks pretty, but the stories are just, for the most part, atrocious. Like Wildcats, for example, you know, like the, you know, first whatever issues, 16 issues or whatever, you know, like it was Jim Lee, and then it was, I want to say Brett Booth at some point, and you know, these different artists, and it looked good, but the story kind of sucked. Like it didn't act, in my opinion, didn't actually get really good until Alan Moore started writing it and started making sense of their backstories and so on. And then you had like artists like Travis Charest showing up, and like Jim Lee coming back and so on and so forth, that, you know, really made it good. But yeah, like a lot of those Image books, yeah, like they looked really pretty, but they're really empty inside. You know, it's like to use an analogy of real life, you know, it's a really pretty girl, but then when you start talking to her, you realize there's not much going on upstairs.
Yeah. Well, and it just shows that looking pretty isn't enough for it. Because, mm-hmm. Yeah, we pick up the covers and we flip through interiors, it looks great.
Yep.
But, I mean, Deadpool has always been a cool-looking character, mm-hmm. but Liefeld didn't make him who he is now, the wisecracking, the joke, and the break the fourth wall, all that. There was people that came along later that made him an interesting character. We talked about it forever ago on an old podcast, but for movie, Sucker Punch. That movie looks so pretty, but it is one of the worst written, god-awful movies I've ever seen.
Yep.
And I want nothing to do with it. And that's what the Image comics were. I'm like, it looks pretty, but I am left not caring at all and regretting the time I spent on it.
Yep. Well, I'm gonna kind of jump on yours a little bit, and say that for my next one, I was wrong in a bad way. Also, because like I was a child of, I got into comics in the 80s, but I really started collecting them the late 80s, early 90s. So, I mean, I was there for Jim Lee. You know, he was, and to be honest, still is my favorite artist. You know, guys like, you know, even Rob Liefeld back then, his, you know, I thought his art was great. And, you know, all the other Image, you know, Mark Silvestri, all them, you know, Todd McFarlane, of course, all those artists, you know, to me, were amazing. But I never really read much Silver Age stuff until, I want to say Marvel started reprinting like classic Spider-Man stuff. And they started reprint, and then I would catch reprints of like the Fantastic Four. And then my mom bought me this, which I wish I still had, but I don't. It's like a magazine, you know, not a hardcover, but it's kind of like a hardcover book, graphic novel of 2001: A Space Odyssey. And the artist, and the artist involved was Jack Kirby. And again, like I was looking at these classic Fantastic Four stuff, classic X-Men stuff, and I remember thinking, you know, that people talked about Jack Kirby, like I heard him, you know, saw his name on the comics pages. He was mentioned by artists and so on and so forth. And I remember thinking, why do people rave about Jack Kirby? Like, his art is not that good. You know, like, I just remember thinking, like, his characters look blocky. I was a kid of the late 80s, early 90s boom, you know, like when you had all these, you know, artists that were just, you know, amazing, you know, and some of them, their characters, you know, were more realistic, you know, and definitely they played more towards, you know, the sexiness of women and all that kind of stuff. And I just didn't understand why people thought Jack Kirby was so great. Then as I got older and actually learned a little bit about comic book history, learned about Jack and his contributions to the Marvel Universe and to DC, I was wrong. Jack Kirby, you know, is an amazing artist. He is definitely, you know, in my top five artists. Like I said, Jim Lee's still my favorite. But I mean, there would be no Jim Lee without Jack Kirby. There would be no Todd McFarlane without Jack Kirby. He is, you know, the Stan Lee of, literally the Stan Lee of comic book art. And ideas, like, you know, like he co-created, like everyone credits Stan for, you know, creating the X-Men, the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, and all, you know, all these other characters. But, you know, it's Jack as well, you know. You know, until you know, that character's rendered on pencils, I mean, it's just an idea, you know, that is void and nebulous and devoid of substance. Until someone puts it down on paper as a picture. And that was Jack. And yeah, I was completely wrong about Jack Kirby as a kid, you know, and like I said, I'm kicking myself in the ass. I wish I still had that 2001 book. I remember my mom bought it at a garage sale, and I know it's worth a lot now, and because it was original. It was absolutely original. I don't know what I did with it. I probably sold it at a garage sale with my He-Man toy collection back when I was a stupid kid. But yeah, no, Jack Kirby, amazing, and I was completely wrong about him. But Kev, what are your thoughts?
I want to say it was an Alex Ross interview, but I'm not entirely sure. But apparently a painter, which is why I want to say it was Alex Ross, was being interviewed, and he said he never liked Jack Kirby's work before. Mm-hmm. Always found it kind of, you know, cartoony and, you know, cheesy and of the era. But then he was noticing in his own superhero paintings, they look too static. And he's like, all right, they look like they're just standing around, but I want the sense of action, of movement, of excitement and all. And that's when he went back and looked at Kirby, and he's like, okay, I may still think it's kind of cartoony, but look how the panels are designed. Look at how everyone's positioned. Look at the angles on it and everything, and how it works, and how it just makes everything jump off the page. I need to take that into my art. And then it did, and it worked.
Yep.
So even if you don't like his style, you can't deny how exciting he makes it.
Oh, yeah. Like, his attention to detail is amazing. Like, you know, unfortunately, the way comic books work, you know, Jack Kirby, like, I mean, it's amazing to think what Jack Kirby did. You know, like, he would do, like, 8 books a month. You know, like, Jim Lee can't even do 1 book a month. And yeah. Jack was doing 8. Plus, you know, a lot of times he was inking his own work. And people don't realize how important an inker is. Because I actually saw, like, I can't remember if it was Jack's work or if it was somebody else's work, where they showed you what had happened, like, for the final page, the final printed page. And then they actually put, like, Jack's, like, uninked pencils beside it. And there was way more detail that just got lost. It got lost by the inker, and it got lost by the colorist. Like, there was way more detail that Jack had in there that I don't know if the inker... Like, I know there was... I can't remember his name, but there was one inker in Marvel. Like, they basically got rid of him because he was trying to do too much, because the more he did, the more he got paid, right? So what was happening is he was pissing off artists because they, you know, like their vision wasn't being realized by this guy, right? I can't remember who what his name was. But yeah, they ended up canning him. But people don't realize it. And I know I went to the Marvel exhibit that they had recently in Edmonton, and I saw some original Jack Kirby work, and it is amazing. It really is. To, you know, even though you're looking behind glass and stuff, it's the detail that man put into his work is absolutely amazing. But Kevin, next on your list, sir.
All right. So I'm going to go with my wife and I, previous to having a kid, we heard about some new cartoons starting. We sat down to watch them, hated one, found another one to be funny, mm-hmm. and then just kind of forgot about it. We didn't, like, stick with it or anything. And then really it was when our kid was little and we were just kind of looking for something, like, entertaining that we started watching it again. There's silly songs sometimes, and, you know, he seemed to be connected to it. Then we're like, wow, this is actually really good. This is really, really good. We need to watch the whole thing from the beginning and then spend lots of money on merchandise because we got into it so much. But the funny thing is, the same night that regular show premiered, which I thought was the better show at the time, a half hour earlier was the first episode of Adventure Time. And I preferred regular show. I thought that was going to be the show.
Mm-hmm.
Cartoon Network's newest hit. And I thought Adventure Time was kind of a joke and hokey and just for kids and stupid and all. And then the more and more we watched, I was like, oh my gosh, they're creating something amazing here. The places they go down, the connections they make, there are episodes of that show that have made me cry. And I'm like, I can't believe we thought this was the lesser show. We could have not have been more wrong.
Yep. Yeah, no, Adventure Time's amazing. It's one of my favorite animated shows. I never had, it's not that I didn't like it, but yeah, like, my kids were watching it. I just assumed it was a kid's show, right? Until I actually, yeah, like you, sat down and actually started watching it. I was like, whoa, this is way deeper than I would think it would be. And yeah, yeah. I love Adventure Time. I'm a huge fan of Adventure Time.
I mean, when you realize, like, oh, there was a war, a nuclear war that created this world, and there's a history here. When you realize the connection of Ice King and Marcy, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, that broke me. It hurt so much. And then we start seeing, like, all the other stuff they're putting in there, and you're like, this is much more than a kid's show. But it's a kid's show, too.
Mm-hmm.
Any age can watch it and get something out of it, but the older you are, the more you're getting out of it. Like, oh, wow. I can't believe you're fitting all of this into this little 15-minute show. And no one's paying attention to all the stuff you're putting in here either.
Yep.
Like, sometimes I think cartoons get away with so much more because, much like, oh, comics are for kids, Biff, Bam, Pow, there's this big segment of adults that think, oh, if it's a cartoon, it's for kids, and that's their thing, and I'll just ignore it. So they get away with more because no one's paying attention.
Yeah, well, and that's the brilliant thing about that show. It's like Shrek, right? You know, like the subtle, you know, humor that they, you know, insert for the grown-ups that the little kid that'll go over the little kids' heads, but will hit home and make, you know, grown-up laugh. Like, that's hard. You know, that, you know, it's like comedy. You know, it's easier to do, you know, dick and fart jokes than it is to do, like, clean humor, all ages humor. Like, that is way harder, in my opinion.
Tangent. I don't know if you get up there in Canada, but once a year, Comedy Central will do a roast of a random celebrity.
Yep, we get those.
Okay. Okay, so they did one for Bob Saget. And, yep. Of course, Bob Saget, in his actual stand-up career, he's filthy. But he played, you know, the clean-cut dad for years on Full House and then hosted America's Funniest Videos.
Yep.
So Norm MacDonald was one of the roasters, and he gets up and just tells all these, like, safe, saccharine dad jokes the entire time. And everyone's staring, like, no one got the joke at first, and then it just kind of, like, one person gets it, and then another person gets it, and they realize what he's pulling here to be, like, a Full House roast, pretty much. And it was brilliant. It was funnier because he wasn't being filthy, he wasn't swearing, he wasn't being over the top.
Yep.
And you had to think about it, too. So it ends up being, like, the funniest moment of the night, but you didn't realize it at the time.
Yep. No, that's awesome. I haven't seen it, but... That sounds awesome. I love Norm Macdonald, too. He would do something like that.
Yeah.
To go on another quick tangent in regards to Adventure Time, actually two quick tangents. One, I still haven't finished the last season. I have it. I buy them. Like, I buy them on DVD, so I have them because I love the show so much. But I just can't bring myself to finish it because I know when, like, even though it's, this sounds stupid, I know how it ends. I know it, but I just, to me, it'll be real if I actually get there. So, like, one of these days I'm going to sit down and finish it. I think I got one disc left on the set. But I just, it makes me sad. Even though, like, apparently they're, I guess, maybe making a spinoff of Adventure Time. And I think it might be on HBO, if I remember correctly.
There's supposed to be something more on HBO Max.
Yeah.
We don't know when it was announced, but I haven't heard any follow-up. And right, because I haven't finished it either. I went on, I think it's on Hulu right now. I went to watch it where I left off, and my son comes running in and is like, I haven't watched Adventure Time in so long. And then he was picking his favorite episodes, which was more fun.
Yeah.
So I wasn't worried about getting to where I was and watching it through. I was enjoying watching his favorite ones together.
Yeah, no, it's great. I love Adventure Time. But my second quick tangent for Adventure Time is last year, the last time I actually got to go to a Comic-Con, I actually got to meet Joe DiMaggio and, or sorry, John DiMaggio, and, I can't remember the actor's name who plays Finn, but I actually got to meet them. They came to Calgary. John DiMaggio, super nice guy, like, so friendly, and, like, I used to watch Adventure Time with my daughters, so he signed his autograph to the three of us. And then same with the actor who played Finn. Super nice guy. Like, he's really tiny. Like, really skinny, slight young man. But, again, also, like, John DiMaggio, very nice, very friendly. I was very glad I got to meet them. But, all right, excellent choice there, Kev. So let's go once more around the table. I guess I got two more, and then... So after this, we'll go once more around the table. All right, so for me, Wonder Woman, the film. Again, I'm going to set the stage for this. So, we had Batman v Superman, and I did not like that movie. But what I did like is I liked Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. I thought, this is awesome. And then I heard that she was getting her own movie. This is awesome. You know, I saw the pictures on set. I saw some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. I was excited. I went and watched the movie, and I loved it. I was like, wow, this is the best DC movie that they've done. And to be fair, like DC Universe movie. And to be fair, at the time, it was true. And then it was, 6 months later, whatever, it's out on Blu-ray or whatever. And one of the guys I work with asked me about it. He's like, I was thinking about checking out that Wonder Woman movie. What do you recommend it? Now, I hadn't seen it since I watched it in theater. And I was like, yeah, it's great. It's, the best DC movie they've done so far. Oh, okay. And so he went and he watched it that night. And the next day at work, he come up to me and he's like, what were you talking about? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, it was so boring. Like, I was so bored with that movie. And I'm like, really? Yeah. And he's like, yeah, it was boring. And I was like, okay, well... you know, and I'd bought it on Blu-ray, but I hadn't watched it yet. But so I made the decision. I'm going to sit down. My wife hadn't seen it. My daughter hadn't seen it. You know, and I thought this was good. This was good. You know, superhero action movie. You know, they're going to love it. We start watching it, and they're both telling me, this is boring. Like, this kind of sucks. And I remember the first time I seen it, I was like, I had this nagging feeling. I'm like, I know I've seen this before. This is so similar to something. And then, yeah, we watched the movie. I think my daughter left halfway through because she was bored. And my wife and I finished it, and my wife said, it was okay, but I'll never watch it again. And I'm like, yeah, it really isn't as good as I remembered it. And then I realized, with Wonder Woman, they basically ripped off Captain America, the first Avenger. Like, that's basically the... Except for, you know, instead of taking place during World War II, it takes place during World War I. You know, like, Wonder Woman... She falls in love with a guy who runs like a group of people, kind of like the Howling Commandos. They fight Germans. You know, she runs into battle just like Cap did. They're very similar movies. The only difference is Captain America did it way better. And yeah, I think part of it is watching it in the theater. Like it. Any movie you watch, especially something like that, it's better to watch it on the big screen. So I think that got me the first go around. And then I also think, you know, because I was so disappointed with Batman v Superman, but yet I loved Wonder Woman. I was so excited for Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman that I kind of went in with blinders on and didn't realize, you know, it really wasn't that good. Like, again, I'm not saying it's a terrible movie. But it's definitely not as good as I thought it was. And I honestly don't recommend it to anybody anymore. Based on what my coworkers' reaction. Kevin, what are your thoughts on the Wonder Woman film?
You know, I hadn't thought of the Captain America comparison. And I think I need to go over that some more. Because I love that first Captain America movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a lot of times that might be my favorite of the Marvel ones. Because I think the way that they build him up and show he's a hero outside of the powers and the mm-hmm. serum, it is fantastic.
Yep.
I honestly think that that trilogy is the best trilogy they have so far, too.
Agreed, yep.
But it's... I think the secret is, with Cap, it's not all exposition for the first act.
Mm-hmm.
There's even if it's, you know, like skinny 90-pound weakling Steve Rogers getting beat up, that's still an action scene. Him diving on the grenade, that's still an action scene. Like, there's still stuff going on. It's not just talking and set up and getting it all going for the first act.
Yep.
And then let's have some stuff happen. But with, like, it's Wonder Woman, you want it. And I don't know, because, like, everything's there in the movie. Maybe it's more like, a different editing path should have been done. Like, let's break this up a little bit, not make it, you know, like you're saying, like, so boring for the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, like, okay, let's break this up a little bit and have something happen here and then go back to that part of the story.
Well, I think one of the things that worked against it is the aesthetic. Like, it was really dark and dreary looking. And I think they've realized that because, like, with this new Wonder Woman movie coming out one day, it's way more colorful. Like, it takes place during the 80s, but, like, even, like, the movie posters, like, there's so much color on it compared to the original Wonder Woman. You know, I just think it had that dark and dreary feel to it. And I think where Cap, the first Avenger, is, you know, it's different in a lot of ways, but I think one of the ways it really differentiates itself is the humor. You know, like the funny parts, you know, when Steve Rogers makes a joke or Howard Stark makes a joke or whatever, or when Peggy shoots, you know, at the shield to see if it actually works because she's mad at him. Like that kind of humor worked. Whereas Wonder Woman, like, I felt the humor kind of was either forced or it fell flat. So
I could see that. I mean, like, and that's one of the things I've always said for the Marvel movies, because they all have the dashes of humor in it. They all have the levity, but it works, and it makes sense for the character, and it works in the plot.
Yep.
But I can't remember, you know, DC ones, there either isn't any humor, or like you said, there's something forced where I'm just like, that's not appropriate. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like when, you know, when your kid tries to make a joke, and they don't quite understand it's a completely inappropriate time to make a joke.
Yes.
Yeah. And they're getting a pass because they're young and stupid. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
But you just roll your eyes, and then you're also like, I know I did that when I was a kid too.
Yeah.
Like, that's when DC does jokes. It's like, this is not the right time for it.
Yeah.
You need to learn your craft more.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where, like, I think Justice League, not to go off in a too much of a tangent here, but like they got that Snyder cut coming out, right, for HBO Max, and I'm kind of interested to see it. But to me, I think Joss Whedon, like his humor, like if he hadn't been called in at the last minute to finish filming the movie, and he had been there from the beginning, I think it would have been a way better movie. You know, I think the reason it didn't work was because he was called in at the last minute. So you had two different visions, kind of, and they're trying to make it work as one, and it just didn't. Snyder.
Zack Snyder?
What's his name again?
Zack.
Zack Snyder, yes. Zack Snyder's cut, maybe, it might be good, because it'll be his vision. It'll be his complete, right? Whereas, you know, like, you had two different types of directors trying to make one movie, and it just didn't gel, in my opinion. But anyway, Kevin, once more around the table, what's next on your list?
All right, so I'm going to go with, it's not quite that I was wrong, it's that I was taught wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was growing up, you know, I had to be careful with my music for all the spooky people, because, you know, Ozzy Osbourne's a devil worshiper and bites the head off of bats, and Alice Cooper's all creepy, and, you know, Kiss means knights in Satan's service and all that stuff. And I was like, well, clearly I have to stay away from this music then. So it's horrible, it's awful, but it's good music and there's good songs, and I would hear some sometimes as I was growing up. I'm like, no, I can't fall down that path. And then as I got older, I'm like, you're all so wrong. It's a show, and this is fantastic music, and just enjoy it.
Yep.
They mean the crazy stuff they're singing about just as much as someone means they got their heart broken last week. They didn't. They're millionaire. They're fine.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's just as much reality in this song. Just enjoy it. But, I mean, I don't know if it was because, like, my family wasn't into any music like that. I went to Catholic school, so, you know, there's only certain types of music that we should be listening to and stuff like that, or that I didn't have, you know, like a older brother or cousin influencing me, my musical taste. But it took me forever to finally break free of that, you know, this is wrong and evil attitude. So, I was wrong, but I was also taught wrong. And then when I finally opened my eyes and ears, I'm like, well, this is fantastic. This is exactly the musical genre I should be listening to. But boy, that's when I still have to, like, I got to defend that music and comics still to this day to people.
So, like, rock and roll or metal? Are you more...
That's the thing. Like, I don't even want to say, like, I wouldn't call Alice Cooper or Kiss metal.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You know, anything just trying to put on a show and be different and have the theater of it all.
Yeah.
And the pageant, you know, because, I mean, that's really what a lot of it is. Oh, let's take music and just add, you know, some theater and craziness to it and make it more exciting show. That's really all it is.
Yeah.
So I don't even want to say just metal, but just that, you know, let's make it dark and spooky and interesting. Mm-hmm. It's almost like doing a horror movie before a rock show. But while people can go and watch a horror movie and, you know, I could have, you know, family members and people there like, oh, I watched The Exorcist or Rosemary's Baby and it's just a movie. But if you say you saw Kiss, they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you saw such a thing. It's no different. It's a show.
Yeah.
Exactly. Either way, it's fake. It's a story. It's for entertainment here.
Excellent. Excellent. I got a couple tangents I want to throw in there. In regards to your music. I love all that stuff too. Like I was very fortunate. My parents, you know, like let me listen to AC/DC. They let me listen to Alice Cooper. My mom was a big Kiss fan. So she, you know, and it's funny cause I don't mind Kiss, but I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan or anything. But as my parents, there was one time, cause there was a local boy, in Edmonton who committed suicide and he had a CD on repeat in his room when his parents found him. And it was Nirvana. So immediately, the local media, and unfortunately his family, they blamed, Nirvana. They blamed alternative music. They said, you know, it's depressing. It causes kids to commit suicide and all this other stuff. So at the time I didn't own any Nirvana tapes or CDs, and my parents forbade me to even listen to them because of that kid. Right. And it sucks. It's unfortunate that this young guy committed suicide. I think he was like a year or two older than me. But, you know, obviously he had issues that went beyond Nirvana, you know, and, you know, it was a few years later that I actually managed to get my hands on some Nirvana music. And I love Nirvana. Nirvana is still one of my favorite bands to this day. And my parents were wrong. Like they were wrong to do that. But like I said, you know, I feel bad for that kid, but I mean, that kid could have had, you know, Garth Brooks on repeat. You know, does that mean we got to ban Garth Brooks, you know? And then I had another tangent. Oh, so when I was growing up, my grandpa was actually in an old-time band. They were called the Shaganappy Pioneers. And they played old-time country music. Like, my grandpa played the fiddle, he played the guitar. There was another guy in the group, he played fiddle and guitar as well. My aunt played the harmonica. There was a lady that played the spoons. I think they might have had someone on piano occasionally. And it was old-timey country music, right? And I remember as a kid, that drove me nuts. You know, it's like, I want to listen to AC/DC. I want to listen to, you know, Metallica. I don't want to listen to this. And we used to go, they would have local Opry's that you could go to, and my grandpa would play, and other country musicians would play. And I remember being so bored. I remember, this sucks, you know. But now, looking back on it, I was wrong. You know, like, I love that kind of music. Like, I love listening to the fiddle. You know, like when I was growing up, we'd go to my grandma and grandpa's house, and my grandpa would break out the fiddle and he would play the fiddle for us. And I didn't realize how lucky I was to have that in my life until my grandpa was gone. And then there was, you know, cause no one else in my family played the fiddle, you know, it was sad, you know, it's like, you didn't realize how good you had it until it was gone, right? And I didn't realize how good that music was until years later. So now, like, you know, for example, if you go to my desk at work and I got a USB stick with, you know, I don't know, 2,000 songs on it. A lot of it is It's so eclectic. There's so much variety. You know, I got jazz on there. I've got old country fiddle. I've got Metallica. I got Megadeth. I got Nirvana. I've got Sonny and Cher. I've got the Bee Gees. I've got Eminem. You know, like if you walk past me and you're listening and you're like. Your genres are all mixed up, man. I'm like, no, like music, in my opinion, music's music. Either it's good or it's not. And, you know, and like I said, I was wrong when it came to old country music, you know, like, and now, like, I love Johnny Cash. I love listening to Johnny Cash. I love Merle Haggard, Alabama, you know, Willie Nelson, you know, I love all that stuff. Like it's, I was so wrong. But anyway, sorry. That's the end of my tangent. All right, so last but not least on my list, and this is a funny one. When I was a kid, I loved Superman. I loved mostly the movies, like the Christopher Reeve movies. I loved Superman. Superman 4, I loved it when I was a kid. Now it's pretty terrible to watch it. And Superman 3 as well. I didn't realize how bad of a movie that was until I watched it as an adult. And I was like, wow, this is not good. But I want to say, like, in the mid 90s, my opinion of Superman changed. And I think a lot of it had to do with the death of Superman, because, you know, I was young and naive. I think I was 11 or 12 when he died. And then they brought him back. And that's what comic books do. And I should know this, right? But I felt like I was taken for a ride. You know, especially when they introduced these new Superman characters. Like, I really liked Steel. I wanted him to be the new Superman. And I really, you know, in my foolish naivete as a kid, I thought that's what they were going to do. He would be the new Superman. And then they brought back Superman. And he didn't actually really die. So, my opinion, like, I was done with the character. I thought Superman was stupid. And for years, I used to say that. You know, like, my one buddy, he was a big Superman fan. Him and I would get in arguments because he knew I was a Hulk fan. And he would say, well, Superman could kick the Hulk's ass. And no, he can't. And then they did that Marvel versus DC. And then Superman did kick the Hulk's ass, which made me hate Superman even more. But my argument for that was always, you know, Superman is just too powerful. He's boring, you know, and his secret identity's stupid. You know, this day and age, why does he have to have a secret identity? If he was really, you know, all powerful, shouldn't, like, patrolling the Earth be his job? Like, why would he waste his time being a reporter and all this other stuff? And now I've come full circle. Now I really enjoy Superman, and I was wrong. There is actually a lot you can do with that character. There's a lot you can tell about that character. And I'll point to probably my favorite Superman story, and that's All-Star Superman. Like that was a great miniseries by Grant Morrison and Frank Quietly, right? Where it you had your beginning and you went through it, and then the way it ended was amazing. And there's other interesting stories you could do, like, you know, Red Sun. That's a good story. You know, I loved him in Kingdom Come. You know, of course, you know, like, I loved that.
Yeah.
You know, like, he was the hero that had to come back and put things right. You know, of course, it had to be Superman, right? So yeah, Superman. I was wrong to think that character. There's nothing you can't do with that. That there's nothing you can do with that character. I was wrong. Like, there's plenty you can do with that character if you do it right. So go ahead, Kev. Your thoughts.
No, I think you're right. It's the doing it right, and unfortunately, he's had so many bad comics.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the you know, when you had the triangle numbering there. Because you had four Superman comics, there's pretty much a weekly comic.
Yep.
And the subplots might be different, but I was like, I don't care about monsters living under Metropolis and who's in charge of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got to read that story for the next 5 months, it seems.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so many boring stories for it. But that's any character that's been around that long. You're not going to have, you know, your best all-time stories every issue. A lot of it's going to be filler to just get an issue out.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, if you at least enjoy it, that's something. But the ones that are good are so good, and it shows why Superman needs to be Superman. He should never be dark and gritty. He shouldn't have an edge to him. He should be Superman. Yep. And we all go through, like, oh, the Punisher is so cool and everything. And then you kind of step back and, you get older and you're like, he's got some issues. He's not really a hero here.
Yeah.
You know, same with other ones. But, like, one of my favorite ones, Kingdom Come's fantastic. All-Star Superman's fantastic. I really like Superman Emperor Joker.
Mm.
I don't know if you've ever read that one.
I don't think I have, but I think I have it on Comixology. It's one of those that's on my to-read list.
I mean, just so good. Bumps Joker up to be a Superman-level villain. He has to solve it. He's out of his element because it's the Joker he's dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the only one that can deal with him at this level. And just freshens up everything. Characters have been around for decades, and here's a whole new take on it. Like, this was amazing. Yep. So good. So you can always put, a new shine on him.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Superman against the... It wasn't the Authority. It was, like, the Authority stand-in. Because they didn't own Wildstorm yet.
Okay.
Superman versus the Elite. So it was DC creating an authority thing.
Yep.
But at the end, Superman showing, like, this is why I'm the example. This is why I'm the icon. Because we do things a certain way here. And your way isn't right. Step up. But yeah. No, the older I get, the more fan of Superman I become.
Yes.
And when I was younger and Snotnose Punk and wanting the Image titles, I didn't see it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, especially during the 90s, even the Hulk, even though I was reading the Hulk for a while there, like when they rebranded the divisions of Marvel and the Hulk fell into Marvel Edge for a while, and they're trying to make him like more of a street level character. Everything was dark and gritty. Like, yeah, I loved the Punisher. I loved, like those type of books. But now, as you said, the older I get, like Superman, the original Captain Marvel, Shazam, I love that character. I love that concept. All those things, I've definitely developed an appreciation for the older I get. But anyway, let's move on to our next segment, and that is Brain Candy. So this is the segment where we discuss something that we've watched, something we've read, something we've listened to, something in pop culture, and then we'll give it a pass or a pan. You know, we'll tell you what we think of it. So Kevin, we'll start it off with you. What do you have this week for Brain Candy?
All right, so I have two comic related things here that I went through since last we talked. I did the Eternals motion comic series.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel a few years back took some comics. They took the comic panel for panel and just added a bit of like simple flash animation to it. Enough to, keep something moving and keep it interesting. Just above like first season South Park when it was super simple.
Mm-hmm.
Or even to that maybe. But they took Eternals, the Neil Gaiman reboot of it, drawn by John Romita Jr. And I watched all, I think it was 10 parts. Yeah, it's 10 parts on there for the DVD. It was on Marvel's page when it started. It's probably on like YouTube now for free or something. But it is just every issue of the comic retold, voice acting, some effects to make it move and all. And I was like, oh, I get the Eternals now. Good thing I finally understand their deal before, the movie's next November now, I guess, at this point, 2021. But hey, these characters by Jack Kirby have been around as long as I've been reading comics. And the only tie-in I have is occasionally ones of the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see them there. But otherwise, I do not care. But this made me, I'm like, oh, this is an interesting story. It broke down a very complicated story of different races and the Celestials and how many are there and where do they live and how long have they been around, what's their hierarchy, and all this craziness. And because it was Neil Gaiman rebooting, which the idea is, something happened to all the Eternals that they don't know they're Eternals anymore. They think they're regular humans just walking the Earth.
Okay.
So Icarus is a guy named Ike Harris. Mercury, whatever you want to call him, is Mark Curry. Like, everyone's just normal people, and then stuff starts happening again, where they're like, wait, I think I might be connected to something else here. But that's crazy. I'm just a normal person. And then the mystery unfolds of what happened and how it happened and larger, you know, forces going into it. I'm like, oh, I care about the Eternals now. I get it. This fantastic story. I've sat through the whole thing now, but I might actually grab the comic itself and see if there's any details they got, you know, left out from editing here. But really good. I'm guessing the whole series is great. Which John Romita Jr. art right now on Superman I have issues with, but this is when he was still trying for this Eternals run.
Excellent.
And then, have you ever heard of a publisher called Ahoy Comics?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So Ahoy got noticed a year or two ago when DC Vertigo was going to do that Second Coming book, and then there were protests against it, and they dumped it.
Okay.
Because it was the Second Coming of Jesus, but done as a superhero, like Superman story, too. So, because it was Vertigo doing it, the press became, oh, it's going to be Jesus Superman, and certain groups got protesting, and DC dumped it because they didn't want the publicity. Ahoy picked it up, and Ahoy, coincidentally, is located in the next county over from me, in New York. So, I was like, whoa, so it looks like they got some cool comics there. So they have one. The first series called The Wrong Earth, and then there's like a partner graphic novel with it as well. But the idea is you have a Adam West Batman analogy called Dragonfly Man. Crazy bright costume, crazy villains, Biff Bam Pow, all that. Then you have your modern, dark, gritty version of him just called Dragonfly. He drinks, you know, he'll kill people, he's miserable, the world's miserable, you know, he's a vigilante, all of that. What happens when those two versions of the same character switch worlds? So our dark and gritty Dragonfly is now on, like, an Adam West Batman world, and the bright Dragonfly man from that world is now in the grim and gritty 80s, 90s world.
Hmm.
How do they adapt? How do they change? How do their methods, which are weird and shouldn't work for that world, end up kind of being what those worlds need, though, as well?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. It was so good. It's absolutely fascinating. So Wrong Earth is like six issues, and then they have a set where they switch. And then they have a second graphic novel, which is Dragonfly Man and Dragonfly, which is adventures where they're on their home worlds, but to just give you like a background of how the worlds work and what the characters have been through and how they've always been kind of similar but different.
Interesting.
So good. I was already like, I need more. And apparently there's plans for another series, but it hasn't happened yet. Amazing.
And it's called Wrong Earth.
The Wrong Earth, yep.
The Wrong Earth. Okay, I'm going to check that out. That sounds awesome. All right, well, for brain candy for this week for me, I got a couple here. First up, I got HBO's Perry Mason. I didn't know much about Perry Mason. Like, I knew it was a show in the 60s. I knew of the TV movies they used to do in, like, the 80s and 90s. I remember those. But I didn't actually watch them, but I just knew of them, right? So when they had this HBO series, what kind of piqued my interest was the lead actor is also the same lead actor from The Americans. So I really like that guy. But also Robert Downey Jr. is one of the producers of the show. And Tatiana Musolani, who was on Orphan Black, she's also on the show. So I thought I'd check it out. And I ended up binging the whole season. Like, there's 8 episodes. It's some of the producers from The Sopranos and Boardwalk Empire are involved in the show. It takes place in the 30s. It's about how Perry Mason goes from being a private detective to actually becoming a lawyer and having to defend this woman that's accused of killing her kid. It was awesome. HBO did an awesome job. The sets were amazing. The acting was great. It was one of those shows that I would watch an episode, because I didn't watch it when it was released. It was released this summer, I want to say June, on a weekly basis. But I didn't watch it then. So I binged it on the Crave TV app up here in Canada. And yeah, it was fantastic. I can't say enough great things about HBO's Perry Mason. And I'm super excited. Apparently, it has been renewed for a second season. So I'm looking forward to that. And also, I didn't realize that Perry Mason actually started as novels that were released like during the 1930s and stuff like that. So I'm kind of interested to go back and pick up some of those. Like, they're re-releasing those now. They're kind of expensive. They're like $20 for a paperback, which is, in my mind, kind of crazy. So I'm waiting to see if they go on sale. I might pick some up and decide to read them. But yeah, HBO's Perry Mason. It's good. It's fantastic. And then last but not least, I started watching Cobra Kai on Netflix.
I've been meaning to.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's one of those things I've heard about. You know, like, I watched the Karate Kid movies when I was a kid. Like, when they were released. Those are the movies, like, I know of. I know, of course, Mr. Miyagi. I know Wax On, Wax Off. I know all that kind of stuff. And I know a few years back, someone did a YouTube video where Ralph Macchio's character, LaRusso, how he was actually the bad guy of that movie. Because he won with an illegal kick and he was instigating Johnny the whole movie. I thought that was kind of funny, but I've never, like I said, I watched those movies when they first came out. I've never went back and rewatched them. I know of them. I know the pop culture significance of them. But I knew of this series. Like, I'd heard that they were doing, it was initially done on YouTube, but then Netflix bought it. And then I kind of did some research into it a little bit. And I was surprised to learn that Will Smith is one of the producers of the show. Because him and his production company, I guess, own the rights to the Karate Kid. Did
the movie with his kid.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Because I think that was Jaden, right?
Yeah.
But then there's another Will Smith kid that's like one of the producers with his dad on the show. It's Jocelyn, I want to say, or something. So it was interesting. I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. But then I was talking to my brother-in-law, and we're talking about shows to watch and so on and so forth, and he was saying, have you watched Cobra Kai? I'm like, no. And he's like, it's awesome. You got to watch it. But I knew my brother-in-law. He's a fan of the Karate Kid movies. He's rewatched them over the years, right? And he's like, even if you haven't rewatched it, you'll like it, trust me. So my wife and I decided to watch it, and yeah, I can't get enough. Like, because I'm watching it with my wife, right? So we watched the first season together, I want to say within 2 days, because I think that's 10, maybe 8 or 10 episodes, but they're only half hour each, so it's not so bad. It's doable. But because we're watching it together and I had to go away back to work, we're just started, getting into season 2. And then I'm told season 3 is going to be released in January, and Elizabeth Shue is coming back for season 3, which I'm pretty excited about.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, I love it. I like I said, if you've watched the Karate Kid movies in the past, I think you'll like this. And they when they think about the past, like when the characters think about the past, they actually show scenes from those movies to give the viewer a perspective on what they're thinking about, right? And so on and so forth. So you don't actually, like, you could probably watch the show without actually having watched the movies. But if you've seen the movies, it's definitely an advantage. And it definitely brings up the nostalgia level. And I gotta say, like, that actor who plays Johnny, he's fantastic. Like, you know, it's the same actor. He was, you know, basically, you know, the bad guy, Ralph Macchio's nemesis in the first movie or two. And he's great. Like, which really shocked me. And I love the perspective of that the show takes, because, you know, in the movies, you know, Ralph Macchio's LaRusso character and Mr. Miyagi, they were the good guys, right? And Cobra Kai, they were the bad kids, right? But this show has taken this perspective where they're not good and bad. Like, Ralph Macchio actually at first kind of seems like a dickhead. But then you realize, no, he's just in a different place in his life. Like, he's not a bad guy either. Like neither of them are bad people. They just have different perspectives on life and on karate and stuff. It's really good. I can't say enough good things about it. But anyway, let's move on to our last segment of the evening, and that is our Enders segment. So this is a segment where we talk about geek news and things that have come to pass lately. So first up, I just want to throw it out there that the first filmed James Bond unfortunately passed away, and that is Sean Connery. Henry Jones Sr. From the Indiana Jones movies, number of other, you know, the first two Highlander movies, Sean Connery unfortunately passed away. I think he was 90. He had a good run, but still sad that that we lost him. But yeah, I loved his James Bond films, but, you know, probably the thing I love him the most is being Indiana Jones' dad, you know, and yeah, he was fantastic in that role. But Kevin, what are your thoughts on Sean Connery?
What actually surprised me a lot from it was I told my wife and she was upset. I thought, why are you upset? You know, like, you're not a Bond fan or anything. She's like, no, but he's just always been there.
Mm-hmm.
He has always been around and all. Even if you just take it as, you know, the parodies that we've all enjoyed over the years too. She's like, it's just so weird that he's gone. He's always been there. And I was like, yeah, that's true. Like, he is iconic. What got me was I saw the top two trending things in all of UK.
Mm-hmm.
Number one was Sean Connery, and number two was Rest in Peace. I thought that was fantastic. Well, yeah. I mean, he was 90, you know, he'd been sick for a while. Like, he certainly lived a life. Like, I can't imagine he has any regrets or any, oh, I wish I did that. He pretty much did it all.
Yep, and he's basically been retired for, like, the last 17 years. Like, I think The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I want to say, was his last film. Or he might have done one after that.
There might be, like, a cameo or something he did.
Yeah, I want to
say, I think it was the last full one.
I want to say he was in, like, a romance film. Like, one of those ones where they have, like, a bunch of stars in it. And they, you know, and each one has their own little story in the movie. I want to say he was in one of those, but I can't remember. But yeah, the last, you know, action film where he was the star was League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which I think I haven't watched it in years, but I liked it. I never understood why they didn't do another one. But yeah, it's very unfortunate, Sean Connery, you know, passing away. But, I mean, you know, he had a good run. But, Kevin, do you have anything you wanted to throw in for Enders?
I'm still waiting to see when DC returns to previous catalog and mm-hmm. Diamond distribution, because they shut down their East Coast distributor. They only have their West Coast one now, and that, which is taking care of the whole U.S. and Canada too, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
And then they announce, here are the new qualifications if you want to order comics from DC. You have to have a brick and mortar store. You have to have a website. You have to have a way for people to order from your website. And you have to order at least $500 worth of DC books every month.
Hmm.
My current shop, they're like, yeah, that's not a problem for us. That shouldn't be a problem for most people. I know for a fact my hometown one that I went to for years could not pass that right now. They have a brick and mortar, and that's probably it right now.
Yeah.
First, I guess the initial reason was there's these, like, buying clubs things where it'd be like you and me and, you know, some other people here in our little circle. If we all pooled together our money and bought our comics direct from Diamond for cheaper rates,
mm-hmm.
but we don't have a shop ourselves. I guess there's people that do that, so they're trying to eliminate that. But then we, you know, whatever the discount off of cover is, we would save all that money by ordering all together. And then, you know, we delivered to one of our houses, and then we'd just divvy it up. So I guess they're trying to shut down stuff like that.
Well, I wonder...
Which I never even thought of. Part of me's mad I never thought of doing that.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I wonder, like, those mail order, like, oh, like, I know in Canada it's called Comic Pull, but in the States, what's it called? Discount Comic Book Service? DBS?
Well, DCBS? That's who's distributing DC.
Oh, so it won't affect them.
But it won't affect them, no.
But it would affect Comic Pull, though. Because I know Comic Pull, like, they don't have a brick-and-mortar store. Like, they're just some warehouse somewhere that orders in comics and then sends them out to people at a discount.
Yeah, so they won't be able to do that. They're trying to cut down on stuff like that. It sounded like there's a rumor I heard on one thing, but that never heard again, that they were even stopping the comp copies to their writers and artists.
Huh.
Because it used to be if you're under contract with DC, you get everything that they put out.
Yep.
Just sent to your house, and it sounds like that's not a blanket thing anymore. Like, you can still get certain things, but they're just not automatically sending you everything.
Yeah. Which, I think Marvel hasn't been doing that for a while. I know back in the 90s they stopped doing that. I don't know if they do that now.
Well, and then they found out that people were just, like, selling the stuff, too. They'd be like, oh, hey, I got, you know, this and this variant and this huge hardcover and this, and I'll just sell them on my own eBay store because I don't want them hanging out here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I remember, like, that book, Marvel Comics, The Untold Story. They stopped doing that. I think they stopped doing that to Stan Lee, because Stan Lee, they used to send him comics all the time, right? And then they said, no, he can buy his own comics. And then they stopped sending them to Stan Lee. I guess Stan, yeah, he can order, you know, afford to pay for his own stuff.
But he shouldn't have to. You wouldn't have the things to send him without him.
So, exactly. Especially back then when they, you know, like, their comics say Stan Lee Presents, you know, like.
Yeah.
But I guess it's just a sign of the times, you know, like. You know, with the economy being what it is, maybe those little corners, you know, they do add up, right? And they got to cut them.
True. And I mean, honestly, it probably, if they said, oh, we're not going to send you physical ones, but we'll send you digital for everything we put out,
mm-hmm.
why not?
That or ask sense. The guy, like, would you like a copy of this? Because maybe, you know, even if you give it to him at a discount.
Yeah, true.
But anyway, Kev, do you have anything else you want to throw out there?
I do not. There's my conversation at the shop today when I went to put a couple some books.
Okay.
I was hearing about it from the realtor end. Or retailer end, not realtor.
Yeah. Well, I got one more thing to throw out there. Have you seen the first episode of season 2 of The Mandalorian?
Not yet. I know everything that happens because I was listening to a podcast and I didn't pause fast enough.
Oh, okay.
So I know everything, but I have not sat down for it yet.
No, it was good. I enjoyed it. I loved the reveal at the end. Fingers crossed. I'm hoping that was Boba Fett. It was cool to see the armor. I knew it wasn't the same actor because this guy was just too tall and skinny. It was Timothy Oliphant wearing the armor. But yeah, I'm looking forward to see what transpires here in the future. I'm waiting. I can't wait till the Empire comes back into it. And Moff Gideon, of course. But, you know, they weren't in this episode at all. That's probably what I'm most excited about. That and learning and seeing some of the other Mandalorians, like Katee Sackhoff's, you know, playing the character she played in Rebels and the Clone Wars. She's coming back as a physical, real person. And then, of course, Rosario Dawson. I can't wait to see her. I'm super excited. And like this first episode, some people complain. They said it felt like a filler episode. It's like something that you should have shown in the middle of the season. But I liked it. I thought it was fun. You know, definitely had a Tremors vibe to it. And I'm super stoked that the Mandalorian's back. Oh, I did have one thing for Enders as well. And I want to talk about Star Trek Discovery a little bit. But not what you think. I'm not going to bash the show. I mean, Star Trek Discovery is also back on TV. I haven't been watching it because I don't enjoy it. But I did want to make a comment on some of the hate that's been going. And I'm going to actually be defending the show. In particular, I'm going to be defending one of the actors of the show. And that is Mary Wiseman. She plays Cadet Tilly on the show, and I've stated before, Mary Wiseman as Cadet Tilly, and Doug Jones as Saru. I really enjoy those characters. Those are the best things to come out of Star Trek Discovery is those two characters. But Mary Wiseman, some people may or may not be aware. Either between season 2 and 3, or maybe when they started filming season 3, she was pregnant, right? And when they started season 3, she was either pregnant or just had a baby. So her character was a little bit heavier than she was on the season 2 finale. And people have been ripping her apart because of it, you know, calling her, you know, making fun of her weight, essentially. And I hate that sort of thing. You know, I think Mary Wiseman, I love Cadet Tilly. I think she's fantastic. And one of the things I liked about Cadet Tilly is she wasn't, you know, a skinny mini chick. Like, I'm a guy that prefers a full-figured woman. Like, that's just the way I am. I'm a big dude myself, you know, and one of the things that's always kind of bugged me about Star Trek is that everyone has to look a certain way, you know, and even William Shatner, like back in the day, like back when he did Star Trek, the motion picture, a lot of people don't know this, but I know it because I read his biography. He actually pretty much starved himself for Star Trek, the motion picture, because he wanted to lose a bunch of weight. So he can, you know, look like he did during the original series, which is crazy, you know. And now people make fun of him for being heavier, right? And I as a bigger person, I like that representation on Star Trek. I think, you know, people of all sizes should be on Star Trek. You know, not every woman's going to have a figure like 7 of 9, nor should she, right? And in my opinion, Mary Wiseman, she looks beautiful. Like I said, I haven't seen season 3 because I don't watch Star Trek Discovery, but I saw a picture that, you know, someone posted on a group on Facebook, and they were, you know, making fun of her, and it's like, dudes, I think she looked great. Yeah, she, you know, maybe she's a little bit heavier than she was in season 2, but I still think she looks beautiful. You know, like, so what? She put on a little bit of weight. Who cares? You know, like, enough of the body shaming. You know, and like I said, that's always bugged me about Star Trek, because I've always been, you know, and I'm not even talking Star Trek Discovery. I'm talking like Next Generation. I'm talking Deep Space Nine. I'm talking about all of them. You know, how everyone has to fit in a tight-fitting uniform. Like, that, to me, that's not realistic. That's not true to life. You know, people come in all shapes and sizes. And, you know, if a person's a little bit heavier, they shouldn't be ridiculed for it. And I know, like, some of the producers, like, and this even goes behind the scenes. Like, I remember years ago I did an interview with Garrett Wan, who played Ensign Kim on Star Trek Voyager. We had, like, I used to do a podcast called Trek 1701, and he was on there. And even he said, like, executive producer of Voyager, Brannon Braga, he used to send them notes about losing weight because he felt they were getting too chubby, like some of the guys on the show. And it's ridiculous. You know, like, you know, people's sizes are going to change. You know, like, some people stay slim their whole life, and especially in Hollywood, we see that a lot, where, you know, actors and actresses, you know, keep a trim figure because, you know, they do that for their careers, and kudos to them. If that's what you want to do, fine. But in reality, in real life, people's bodies are going to change. People are going to gain weight. They're going to lose weight. They're going to gain weight. It happens, right? And, you know, shame on those people that are watching Star Trek Discovery and body shaming Mary Wiseman. Like, you should be ashamed of yourselves. I hate that sort of thing. So anyway, I just want to throw that out there, because here I am, I'm actually defending an aspect of Star Trek Discovery for once, which I thought was a nice change. But yeah, Mary Wiseman, she's amazing. She, like I said, her and Doug Jones, I love those guys on Star Trek Discovery. Unfortunately, that they're the only things I love about Star Trek Discovery, which is why I'm not watching it. But Star Trek fans, you know, we got to do better, you know, like, enough of the body shaming. Anyway, that's all I got. So let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Kevin, where can I find you, sir?
All right, you can find me on all the social medias at Mask Library. MaskLibrary.com is my home blog. And I have another podcast over on the Retro Network called The House Show, where we discuss retro wrestling.
Excellent. You can find me. I have a blog, randomnerdness.blogspot.com. Occasionally, I do blog there. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at ChrisLock1701. And I'm also on this podcast, where we also do episodes called the Deep Space Nine Discussion Group. And we recently did an episode where we had some technical difficulties, so we only did 6 episodes of the beginning of season 6. So our next episode, we're going to continue on from there. Hopefully we don't have technical issues. But yeah, we're still doing those episodes, still having a good time. That'll be closer to the end of the month, unfortunately. Due to scheduling, that's just the way it is. But anyway, this was our We Were Wrong and Now We Admit It episode. On behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and Kevin Decent, my co-host, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.